Hello and welcome to The Book Album, your place for everything related to reading and language. I'm your host, Mackenzie Gentz. Now, bookmark that book and let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu unserem Podcast. This is the third week back on our show. As you can probably hear, spring is coming here to Munich. It's quite a rainy, cold day as I'm recording, but the sun is starting to peek out just in time for it to set in a couple hours. But nevertheless, we're moving into a period of much warmer, much sunnier weather. And today the podcast is endearingly entitled Reading Fast and Slow. Yes, this is a reference to Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman, really acclaimed psychologist, and a book that I have not read. It was a book recommended by Richard Thaler in a famed book of his called Misbehaving. I'm sure he also mentions it in Nudge, but Nudge I also haven't read, so this is sort of an endearing nod to Daniel Kahneman's work. His work I have read, the book I have not yet. I would love to hear if you all have read it, what your thoughts on it are, but in it, Daniel Kahneman explores the different and somewhat advantageous ways of thinking when working on a problem, or also in decision making, is when these two different modes of thinking can influence or impact your process of making that decision. In reading Fast and Slow, a slightly different but quite related subject, I'll be discussing briefly what it's like to practice different modes of reading for your advantage. I'll start by giving an example. With a lot of my article reading for my master's thesis, some of it is in German, some of it is in English, and I've been reading these quite slowly. In terms of, I've been making margin notes and highlighting, taking notes in a notebook on the side, really digging into the studies, understanding their minutiae, understanding their methods. This is something that I have a particular focus on for this part in my thesis, this season in my thesis. And I've been really taking my time. So each article is probably 20 pages and takes me 30 minutes to read. On the other hand, I'm reading a short work of fiction called Answered Prayers by Truman Capote. Capote is a writer whose work I've wanted to delve into a bit more for a few years now. Really, ever since I saw that movie called Capote about his life and about his writing. The 2005 movie, as I later discovered, starring Philip Seymour Hoffman in the lead role. Really contemplative, nice film to watch. But anywho, ever since I read In Cold Blood and then subsequently watched this film, I've been wanting to really delve into Capote's work. And at the time that Capote wrote Answered Prayers, which is... The title comes from an epigraph by Saint Teresa. More tears are shed over answered prayers than unanswered ones. And it's sort of his expose of the rich. It reminds me a lot of Hemingway's A Movable Feast, his autobiographical work. That these vignettes about life as a member of the Lost Generation in Paris. And he details Fitzgerald, both F. Scott and Zelda's lives there, and the lives of other people, Gertrude Stein, etc. Truman Capote wrote with not such a veiled or metaphoric style about the people he knew in his life among the rich and famous. And Answered Prayers was supposed to be this sort of exploration of a Proustian revelation. And there was supposed to be a lot more like deep embedded psychological exploration. What ended up happening is Truman Capote was in the later stages of his addiction to many, many substances and had started to go downhill. And so he had been writing Answered Prayers, he had been talking to people about it. There's even chapters that he told people about that were perhaps either never written or destroyed. And there's just a long history of this very short work of three parts. He did end up publishing sort of snippets of this work in newspapers, but those snippets were, again, so close to reality and so close to the people he actually knew that the lines between fiction and reality faded, and he was estranged from a lot of the people he wrote about. Not unlike Edith Wharton when she wrote The House of Mirth, or a number of her other novels, she was really writing about people she knew. And I heard different interpretations of how Edith Wharton's writing was received amongst her peers, whether it was entertaining or unacceptable is, for me, out for the jury. I'd have to research that more. But yeah, for Capote, it certainly didn't bode well. And of course, especially since later in life, he became increasingly erratic and his writing also became increasingly erratic. Yeah, this is a short book with a lot in it. And it's as much a fictional exploration of this writer, P.B. Jones, Capote's alter ego, as it is of the realities of Capote's situation with addiction at the end of his life. And a lot of the thematic material is quite lewd, to be honest, and difficult for me to read, at least. And so it's been definitely a challenge. Though the work is short, it has been a very challenging thing for me to read. However, it also has these gems and these little philosophical pieces in it, and the writing is still there. And so it's this very complex work in that way. But this work, I'm reading a lot faster. It's been hard for me to get through it, but when I'm reading it, I'm reading goal-oriented. I'm reading for verbs and noun phrases. It's a read where I'm really looking at structure in terms of the sentence structure. I'm looking at sentence variation. I'm looking at sort of these overarching elements in the book. And for that reason, or to that end, I'm reading it a lot faster. So we have these two examples, reading slow, these academic articles that I'm piling through for my master's thesis, and the short work, novella, one might say. I'm not sure how one would classify this work, but it's short. It's like 120 pages or so by Truman Capote, Answered Prayers. And I'm juxtaposing these to illustrate what kinds of scenarios beg which kinds of reading. In the past, I've done speed reading. Speed reading is a tactic where you look for these big building blocks of each sentence, and you're looking at, again, these sort of bird's eye view things that you can pick out of the page. Speed reading is something that involves a lot of technique, and it's also something that one has to practice, meaning that when I learned speed reading back in the day, I learned it in a class. My younger brother had a reading deficiency. He got behind in reading by a couple grade levels in grade school. And so my parents didn't really know, my mother didn't know where to put me because he wouldn't do summer school unless I did. So I got put in a speed reading course at age 10 or 11. And we practiced speed reading, and we practiced getting our reading faster. The class that I was in was geared a lot more towards test prep and things of that nature. But at the same time, we read novels, for example. And with that, we would often choose passages and we'd speed read them in class to try to get our reading speed up. And how you do that is you time yourself for a minute and you read as much as you can with still a good understanding of the text in that 1 minute. And then you count the lines in the book, the amount of lines that you read, and you multiply that by 9, because at least in those days, it might change, but I'm assuming it's similar. There's around 9 words per line, and there's about 25 or so lines per page. So you can see how that math works out quite well. You're multiplying the words per line, which is 9, times the amount of lines you read in a minute. And that gives you the amount of words per minute that you've read. And you start slowly, it's like typing practice a little bit. It's kind of this rote, it's on the one hand, it's this rote skill that you practice. On the other hand, there's a lot of finesse to it. And again, technique, which I'll talk about. And you just sort of keep ticking up these words per minute until you're quite satisfied with your level of understanding of the text versus the speed with which you've read it. And that's what's unique about speed reading, is that there's a certain extent to which you're sacrificing understanding to get speed. And so it comes in these very particular contexts. So for example, standardized testing, typically it's more advantageous, at least in these like timed tests, to read a bit faster or to have a reading speed that's at least gonna allow you to get through the text with a good amount of understanding and time to answer all the questions. And so, you know, there's a time and a place for speed reading as there is for slow reading. In terms of technique, I'm a linguist, right? So this comes sort of naturally to me. English is a subject, verb, object kind of language, which means that most of the sentences come in this form, subject, verb, object. So Mary walked the dog. Subject, Mary, verb, walked, object, the dog. There are some, you know, of course, more complex variations, but really what drives the sentence is the verb. In a lot of fiction, it depends on, again, the era, all the peculiars behind the fiction and how it was written and for what purpose, but typically, you know, there's gonna be some like to be verbs and there's gonna be some action verbs. There might be some really interesting oddball verbs, and these are good to look out for. But you kind of know that there's these different verb forms that you're gonna see. There's the ing form, the present progressive, there's the past tense, the ed form, and simple past. And then there's, you know, these sort of present tense active verbs, he runs, for instance. So you're looking out for these various verb forms and you're looking for patterns. Speed reading is a lot about pattern recognition. For me, I look for punctuation and comma placements. So I can easily tell on the page if something's a list, for example. If there's a really long sentence, I can see that right away. And when it comes to practicing speed reading, it's really important to watch out for what causes you to stumble or what causes you to pause, like which hurdles you come across. That will vary depending on the work in question, but for me, if there's a lot of different sentence variations, which there should be, don't get me wrong, but there's, for example, a really distinct sentence variation, so there's a lot of short sentences followed by like a sentence that's half a page, then that half a page sentence is something that I'm going to anticipate while I'm reading to try to get through it, and I might change my strategy and look more, for example, at each clause of the sentence. So before each comma, mark where the commas are. It depends on the individual sentence, but I'll look more at those building blocks with punctuation rather than at verbs, for instance, if I know there's something that's going to be difficult for me to read with the same speed and accuracy. And then there's nouns, and nouns are really important because you need to know who the agent is, right? Who's acting, who's running, who is pushing somebody, you know? There's so these different nouns or noun phrases, as the case may be, are also really important. It's important to have this sort of roster in the back of your head where you're tracking, just as you would if you're normally reading. Okay, there's these sort of major characters, there's these characters who are relevant for the scene, etc., etc., etc. So then you can start to decode what you're reading with the background knowledge that you have in mind, with this pattern recognition that you're building up, and then building up individual strategies as you're going through. So again, for me, like, I look a lot at sentence variation and punctuation, aside from these different verb forms and different, you know, roster of different characters or nouns that are occurring. But for each person, that will be different. I should also mention that this varies depending on what language you're speaking. And with different languages, there's different, for example, case markers or different things to attend to. So for example, in Turkish, it's necessary for you to indicate whether you are directly experiencing something or whether you've heard it from something else. So reported speech versus direct speech. So different languages, again, have different things to attend to. This is just what I've learned for English. Aside from speed reading, getting your normal reading speed faster is also highly achievable. I read a lot faster than I did even last year or the year before, and it's because, right, I practice reading. And this is not something that should be taken lightly, right? The more you do something, the better you get at it. And so, especially if you're in an environment where you're quite focused. So for me, I love reading on the train. Yes, I do miss train stops sometimes, but not often. Or I read before bed. And these are times when I can have this sort of quiet, regular time to read. And I really am completely focused on just reading. And I've gotten a lot faster at it. So I would say if you're not into speed reading, if that's not your thing, I would say I don't speed read personally as much as I used to. Not by a long shot. I almost never speed read anymore. But if I'm reading something faster and I'm starting to implement those speed reading strategies for whatever reason, whether it is a text that I maybe know from before and I'm rereading some of it to get reacquainted, or if it's a text that sometimes you just run out of time and you're just trying to get through a text, that might be another situation. Or if you're just looking at something and you're saying, I might need to just read this quickly and see how it goes. I often will pair a speed read round with a slower read, so I'll read it really quickly first just to get an idea of the structure, and then I'll read it back slower. This is actually what I did on any standardized tests, and I still do it on any like language exam that I take. I'll speed read first to get an idea. What's the structure? How does it begin and end? What are the main characters or plot points? And then I'll read it back again extremely slowly and take notes, all of that. In terms of this sort of middle of the road reading speed, your typical reading speed, neither deliberately slow nor deliberately fast, the best thing to do, in my opinion, is to read a lot of different texts. So for me, I read, as I have mentioned in weeks previous, nonfiction, fiction, contemporary, more historical books, a lot of different types of fiction too. I've read some flash fiction this year, which is really interesting. Of course, that's like not in a book format, but still. Poetry too might be an interesting thing to add to the list for somebody more poetically inclined. Different types of poetry as well. I've heard Herman Melville was quite a lovely poet, and has written several anthologies of poetry, if I'm not wrong. So for me, this would be reading Edgar Allan Poe, reading Charles Dickens, but also reading things from Jenny Urbanbeck, or Maggie O'Farrell. John Foss Septology is on my shelf, it's just staring at me still. Or even like Capote, Murakami has a new book coming out, and I saw the German translation in the bookstore the other day, and I was so shocked because I had not heard of this book coming out, and I realized that the English translation isn't coming out until, I believe, November, at least the fall. So maybe I'll read this in German just to get a head start. I digress. Slow reading is slow because of the things that you're doing that are not reading. So slow reading takes a lot of forms. For me, I take notes, I annotate, so I have a different annotation system for every type of text. For scientific articles, there's different color highlights and things I use, or I'll circle a half a sentence, whatever it is. I don't have, honestly, the prettiest or most efficient annotation system, but it doesn't have to be. I find that anytime I am marking up and engaging with the text, that's what matters when in terms of memory later, not so much how it looks. As long as it's the text itself is readable, I suppose. Also, for me, when I'm slow reading, I leave as much time open as I need to just think about the text. So if there's a part where I'm like, huh, I don't quite understand what that means, or if there's a part where I'm thinking, huh, you know, I'm not sure, you know, what I can, maybe I can apply this to my own project or something. All of those different scenarios are ones in which I'm stopping the reading process to think. And thinking is a really big part for me in this slow reading. I also will write notes, not on the article itself, well, that too, but also just in a notebook on the side for things that I find particularly important, and I'll often use like several different types of pens and just anything to make it more vibrant, more colorful, more tactile. All of these things are really important for slow reading for me. So Charles Dickens, there are passages that I definitely slow read because I just find them so fascinating and beautiful. A lot of authors whom I admire are, you know, authors who have written passages that I love to slow read as well. So it's not just confined to this academic, technical language space. I find that there are times and places in my personal reading where slow reading is definitely worthwhile. Alright, that wraps it up for this episode. I hope you enjoyed thinking about reading fast and slow. Let me know what you think in the comments for this episode, and I will see you all hopefully next week.